takes us very neatly to James Ball from BuzzFeed, because you were supposed to disrupt all this complacent media, mainstream media, and I just wonder whether how you feel that you did do in terms of offering something that, you know, didn't fall into this this trap. And obviously, please tell us about whether that dossier is proof that you have leapt out of that niche.
Well, I would say, you know, one thing we have not been accused of in the last 2 weeks is not disrupting things. So let's talk about the dossier, and I'll sort of just stress first, I am giving my positions, not BuzzFeed's. This isn't a story I worked on. And there's this idea that essentially John sort of said BuzzFeed was doing okay and then sort of hurt its credibility by publishing something unverified. I think the issue is we were maybe about the fourth or fifth place to base a report on something unverified. It's just we actually let the audience know it was unverified. You know, Mother Jones, months before the election, had alluded to this dossier. Several other outlets had alluded to this dossier, and then CNN alluded a lot more directly to this dossier. And I spent years as a defense and security reporter. I worked on the Snowden leaks with Glenn Greenwald, the Republican Party's favorite journalist. So it's the only time I will ever get to say that sentence. And I know what documents like that are. This is what raw intelligence is. People initially do a sift. They pick up every bit of information, every scrap, every rumor. It's also what Oppo Research is, which is what this document was. This then gets filtered through, double-checked against other raw intelligence, looked to see what can be verified, what can not. And essentially, it came from a very credible and serious source. It was being considered by the FBI, by several senators, by people in the House, and by a lot of journalists. And it was being used to steer reporting. But in this very sort of, well, trust us, we can't let you see it, of course, but we've seen this, and there are some very serious allegations about Trump and Russia. And it's this thing of, actually, some of this document was garbage. Some of this document looks really sort of like it needs and is worth pursuing. And essentially the outlets, some of which subsequently criticized BuzzFeed for this document, were often using it and hinting at it and talking about it. And once it's out there, actually, everywhere has come and talked about it in a much more clear, much more substantial way, and we know what has and hasn't happened because of it. So has the picture become a lot clearer and better because BuzzFeed published that document? Yes. And therefore, was it a good decision? Yes. And, you know, I'm completely mystified by places that essentially try and sort of ride both horses on this. The New York Times public editor essentially said the New York Times should have done more on this earlier and more aggressively, but shouldn't have published it, of course. It's like, essentially, at some point, you know, the current argument of a lot of the media is that the public are sophisticated enough to essentially be able to take incredible complexity in the way we communicate and we write. I think my issue with a lot of how we do journalism now, and I think nowhere has tackled it, I think BuzzFeed is taking lots of steps to do it, is, you know, there's an apocryphal quote from Einstein, you know, the definition of insanity is repeating the same action and expecting different results. And essentially it seems to be, you know, what's really going to change the world is if I do another 17,000 word impenetrable investigation. It's, you know, we have this issue at the moment on Brexit and on Trump of clear messaging versus very obscure messaging. You had, you know, Make America Great Again versus I'm with her. You had Take Back Control versus Stronger Together, which didn't even fit what Remain was doing as a message. You had 350 million a week. And, you know, as John very sort of rightly said, this was brilliant bait for Remain supporters to go, well, actually, depending how you look at it, it's 250 million a week or 175 million a week. And Remain's actual argument against this is essentially, well, even if it is 175 million a week, in reality that wouldn't be there because economic growth would be slower under Brexit and tax take is a share of GDP. And so GDP growth is slower. This means that by 2020, the gap in GDP will be about 10 billion. And so there'll be 5 billion less a year in tax. And some of that will have to reflect through this. So I did an economics degree and I can just about follow that with a notepaper and a book. That was the argument they were trying to make. And no one's going to get it. And this is sort of what we keep coming to again and again. And I think we have an issue in journalism in that people think, I think journalists think everyone knows our tricks. They understand that we have to phrase things in certain guarded ways because of norms and conventions, like Ofcom, like BBC impartiality rules, and in large part like Section 4 of the Defamation Act. You know, we cannot turn around and say, what this person did looks fishy. We need to say, here is some evidence. We are setting this out impartially. Here is what this person says about this evidence. I think this is suspicious and should be looked into. Here is what the person says about it. This isn't suspicious. This is fine. Decide for yourself. No one understands that we have to write in that stilted way because that way we can get it through a defamation case. We have a lot of these sort of instances. We don't use the word lie because we can't prove it. I actually think the New York Times did absolutely the right thing using the word lie on Saturday because Sean Spicer is a well-known, well-respected, intelligent man, quite trusted by journalists before his current position. And there is no way when he went out on Saturday, he didn't know what he was saying was untrue. I just cannot conceive that he didn't know it. Whether Trump believes his own spin is an entirely different question. And genuinely, there's a very good essay by the philosopher Harry Frankfurt called On Bullshit. And essentially, the liar has some respect for the truth. They know there exists an objective truth, and they're referring to it. The bullshitter, sorry, I have to use the word here. The bullshitter essentially has given up on that idea, and so does just their narrative. And they are the real enemy of it. And at that point, you do have to attack other places. And I think it's a relatively good explanation of Trump's behavior. But the other thing we have to think about on clear communication is defaults. And journalists have a horrible habit of writing for each other. And in all honesty, almost every piece of journalism you read is written for a middle-class white man living in London. I'm from a relatively working... Oh, straight, I should add. I come from a relatively working-class family, and honestly, a lot of even what is supposedly supportive journalism about northern towns reads as if they're talking about a rare species of monkey they've found somewhere. It's, you know, it's sort of like going on safari. It's very sweet. You know, sort of writing about sort of the any kind of gay subcultures, it's again this sort of fascinating, oh, they've got this thing called chemsex, you know. And sort of it's constantly explained. And, you know, from my black colleagues, from my Asian colleagues, I know that a lot of coverage is very much the same. And actually we have to start having people of a community talking to that community and not constantly trying to explain things to a bunch of people who already agree with us and not actually following a lot of patterns and norms of complexity, of making our best stuff inaccessible, of trying to make ourselves look clever rather than get a point across. You know, I know what a GDP deflator is. My audience don't need to know what it is or that I know it. They just need me to make the point accurately. And that's some of the things we try and fix at BuzzFeed. We do headlines, which lots of journalists find like nails on a blackboard, because it's essentially, our headline is how you would tell it to an actual other human being. Read out a headline in a pub sometime and see if you sound like you're demented or not. So we don't try and take a bias. We try and report fairly. We try and report clearly. We actually try and sort of sometimes push a bit more aggressively than other places and call it like it is. And we try and talk to people, not about people. But nowhere's fixed this, and it's complex. And we are not in a normal administration. The last sort of failing of the press, I think fake news has been a really great, useful thing for the mainstream media to stop introspection, because it's this nasty fake news, it's Russia. Now, everyone has always gone, Trump doesn't really mean it, or he'll be moderated, or he'll be calmed down, or he'll be Trump is still talking about voter fraud after he's won. He's launching an official inquiry into it today. He's the first person to launch an inquiry into an election he's won, I'm sure. He's signed the executive order to build the wall, and unlike John, I think he will build it. If you want to know what Donald Trump will do, listen to what he says he'll do. And the desperation on Monday when everyone tried to say there'd been a pivot because someone did a press conference and answered some questions with no more than usual levels of dishonesty, it doesn't look good. It doesn't look comprehensible, and it alienates people. And if we alienate the centre and the left from the media as well, we've got no one left.
I'm gonna get some questions from the audience, but I just want to follow up, James, because in a way there's a sort of similar themes coming across here. But they're all remarkably defeatist, that people here are talking about the kind of magic of politicians who are able to confound, you know, these brilliant messaging of the Brexit team, brilliant messaging of Trump. The mainstream media, as Alex said, is in its little sort of bijou flats in Covent Garden and doesn't know what's going on. But I wonder if there's another element to it, which, again, it's a bit unfair, but you guys, digital guys, were supposed to fix, which was that, the internet is out there. And actually that was supposed to enable journalists to reach beyond their bubbles. You know, it was supposed to, and yet, and this is something that people have sort of been hinting at, but you're never supposed to be rude about the public, but there's a sort of suggestion, well, actually, they're too dim or too busy to be able to engage with this, especially because they're too distracted by the other stuff that BuzzFeed does, you know, with the kittens and things.
Because, of course, newspapers never had lifestyle sections or feature sections or quizzes or crosswords or
Breitbart or whatever, you know.
But So
are you admitting defeat is what I'm saying?
No, I actually thought it was being relatively constructive. I think the problem is I think a lot of us have a habit of looking at a solution and then going, yeah, I don't really like the look of that. It's like John was essentially going, hey, the New York Times had a headline called A Lie, A Lie, and I really think that was bad practice. It's not our job to do that. We should sit back and discuss. Sorry, I'm being... but it's that thing of we have a certain sense of we like to be elevated, we like to be above the debate, we like to be discursive. I'm brutally mischaracterising you. We are in a post-truth era. but we have to... It's not that hard to be clear, and you don't have to, just because you know nuance, it doesn't mean you always have to explain every bit of your reasoning. You know, there is a lot of sophistication in tabloid reporting. If you don't read tabloids, you should, because the Sun can often get an incredibly complex issue through in simple sentences, and a lot of them are better writers than their broadsheet colleagues because of it. And there is nothing wrong with saying a sentence that seems simple. You know, a clever point doesn't have to sound clever. If you've ever had to read anything on epistemology, you'll know that anything that's on it, you know, the longer something is, the more words it is, the more likely I am to think you don't have a point or that it's dumb. We've sort of, you know, you say we're talking about it as if it's this magic trick. Hey, it turns out being clear, sticking to a message, actually trying to connect to people who the media or politicians haven't connected to is some alchemy. It's the answers are there in the problem. Talk to people that aren't being talked to, do it clearly, sort of think about the norms.
Yeah, yeah. Which is why The Economist is on Snapchat and why John's on Twitter.